Lion were not masculine. But the Dracula spots was a bigger Torah center than your lion was. So because of that, they didn't, you have to say, once you have Shemichah, that's a major thing. You can then have a Sanhedrin. The reason why we don't have a Sanhedrin is because the Sanhedrin requires Shemichah.
Would it have to be Dafkin Eretz Yisrael when the Rambam is speaking?
Yes, Shemichah can only be given in Eretz Yisrael. And even if a person has Shemichah in Eretz Yisrael, he cannot give it in Kutzlaret. We were talking about, he's asking me about the little event of what's called Chiddush HaSmicha. You know, all the rabbis here have fake smicha. We just have permission to paskin or to teach. But the real smicha that would allow you to have a Sanhedrin and paskin dinei kenosais normally requires an unbroken chain from Moshe Rabbeinu of ordination, and that chain got broken in Roman times. And that's why the later Amoraim, none of them have smicha. But the Rambam has a lashon that says that if most of the all of the Chachamim want to get together, they could get together and create smicha again. So Rav Yosef Krebi in the 1500s, Rav Yaakov Beirav, actually took the position that we should be mechadesh smicha, and he ordained four talmidim. Rav Yosef Karo and the Mabit, Rav Moshe ben Yosef Trani, and Rav Moshe Galante and Rav Moshe Alshech. Now the Chachmei Yerushalayim did not accept this, and because of the Machlokes, even those who got Smicha did not give it to the next generation, so it just died, presumably until the coming of Mashiach, because until then you're not going to get a majority of Chacham agreeing to anything, so it's certainly not going to happen. Now there is a body in Jerusalem, you may know, that goes by the name Sanhedrin. Rabbi Steinzel. Well, no, the Jewish is part of the secular body, but there is a Jewish body. A Jewish body that claims to be a Jewish Sanhedrin, but nobody really is makabel for anything at all. Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to go weiter a little bit with the building of the Mishkan. You know, last Shabbos was Rosh Chodesh Adar Aleph, and normally, if it just would have been a regular Adar, that would have been the Parsha of Shkolim that we read about the Mitzvah of Machzus HaShekel. So I want to talk about that a little bit because it is connected to Hakamas HaMishkan. And that is, there are really two different Mitzvahs of Machzus HaShekel. People don't always realize this. One is an annual Mitzvah. Every single year, a man, not a woman, had to give, and perhaps had to be 20, had to give a half shekel as a tax towards the financial upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash, and those shekelim were used for the purchase of korbanos. And why do you have to do it every year? Because now the fiscal year of the Beis HaMikdash begins in the month of Nisan. That's the beginning of the year. And from Rosh Chodesh Nisan onwards, the korbanos sibor can only be brought from shekelim, newly collected money. You can't even use money from last year. Let's say there's a surplus in last year's account. You cannot carry it over. The Mishnah, in fact, Masechet Shkalim, is a lot of it is accounting. It talks about how do you deal with old surpluses, what do you do with them, etc. Because starting from Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the korbanos had to be brought from new Shkalim. That is why the Mishnah says, B'yachad B'yadar Mashmian al Shkalim. We start announcing that people should pay their shkolim in first of Adar, because that would mean, in other words, that by Nisan we would have enough money in the bank, so to speak, that we would buy new korbanos from the new money. Now, it's a strange thing in a way.
Collect the money before the year starts?
Yes.
And you might collect it now, but it still counts for the following year?
Yes. Since it's being collected for the purpose of the next year. Now, that means like this. Although, in theory, every korban sibor is supposed to be owned by all of Bnei Yisrael. Now, l'chaira, anytime we're using money, even if we had a full treasury, we'd be using money that, you know, belonged to Reuven and Shimon or whatever it would be. And certainly, by the time Nisan starts, you know, you don't have a lot of money necessarily. right? You must have enough money for a week, 2 weeks, whatever it would be. But still, once it enters the Shkolin treasury, it now becomes communal money belonging to Am Yisrael, so everything that is bought with that money belongs to the Jewish people. And therefore it's a Korban Sibor. Korban Sibor. Now, there is a way around that. If somebody wanted to donate the lambs or donate the animals, that would be acceptable too, but the requirement is that he give them to the tzibor. He can't have the korban tumid brought as his offering. It has to be brought for all of B'nai Yisrael. So somebody has to be kona the animal on behalf of Am Yisrael. Now this is an annual mitzvah called Machzis HaShekel. Now, interestingly enough, that mitzvah is not beferish in the Torah. When the Torah talks about giving shkolim at the beginning of Kisisa, it is not referring to that machzis hashekel, it is referring to another machzis hashekel. That is, this was a machzis hashekel that was involved in the actual construction of the Mishkan. Now the Mishkan was comprised of many different materials, zahav, kesef, etc., all of those different things. And normally, you were not mandated how much to give. You could give as much gold or as little gold as you wanted to give. But there was one part of the Mishkan which required uniformity, and that is everybody gave one-time donation of a half shekel of silver, and that half shekel of silver was melted down, forming what is called the Adonim. The Adonim means the sockets, and if you've seen a picture of the Mishkan, if you remember the description of the Chumash, the walls of the Mishkan were called Kereshim. They were thick boards, but each board had two teeth, like the teeth on a plug. And when the Mishkan was set up, the teeth were inserted into silver boxes. They resembled like concrete blocks, but imagine them of silver, in which one plug went into, in other words, each keresh had two adonim, one for each tooth of the plug. And those adonim were very heavy. I once saw calculations like they were like a few hundred pounds each. They were essentially the foundation of the Mishkan. And then, in fact, if you remember, the tapestries that covered the roofs went all the way. It covered the entire exposure of the board and even some of the adonim as well. So you really didn't even see it, but they were the foundation. So Rashi says that all of this is merumas in the fact that in Parshas Truma, the word truma is donation, gift to Hashem, is mentioned three times, because there were three different things that Israel had to give. They gave the machzis hashekel for korbanos, they gave the machzis hashekel for the adonim, and then they gave kol asher yidvenu libo, whatever they wanted to give, for the rest of the construction of the Mishkan. But what's interesting is that when we focus on the Adonim for a moment, it is the only part of the Mishkan for which HaKadosh Baruch Hu requires a uniform donation, whether you are rich, whether you are poor, whether you are generous, whether you are stingy. Every other part of the Mishkan, you gave whatever you wanted to give. Right? Why should that be so? Karbonus is one thing, but this is part of the building of the Mishkan. Maishna, the Adonim, from every other part of the Mishkan. So some want to say Balabatish, so to speak, that it's similar to a building fund. That the parts of the building that everybody sees, everybody enjoys, people want to give to that. So when Hashem says for the Aron, for the Mizbeach, for the Choshev things, Hashem doesn't have to give you a minimum donation because everybody is going to naturally want to give. The Adonim is like the foundation, the basement, literally. It's the basement. For the basement, people don't want to give, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to say, you know, you have to give this much. But I want to machshava from the Ber Yosef. The Ber Yosef, Rav Yosef Salant, he must have been Rav Yisrael Salant's mishpacha, but I don't remember Rav Shmuel Salant's mishpacha. He's older, you tell me. Magid, a great Adam Gadol, who died around 40 years ago. And he gives a beautiful explanation as to the significance of the Adonim. There's a Gemara in Makos that says, you know, Moshe Rabbeinu gave us 613 mitzvahs, and that's based on the Pasuk, Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Moshe gave us a Torah. Torah is 611. And the way we explain it, the Gemara says that the first two of the Aseret HaDibros, Anochi and Lo Yelecha, we heard directly from Hashem, and Moshe gave us 611. But then the Gemara goes on and says that as the generations got weaker and weaker, spiritually inferior, eventually they had to reduce the number. Now, reducing the number doesn't mean they eliminated mitzvahs. But people couldn't get their head around, wrap their brain, so to speak, around 613. So people were given principles they could remember that would encapsulate all of the commandments. David HaMelech had 15, etc. So I just want to go towards the end of the list. Towards the end of the list, the Torah says, Micha, one of the Nevi'im before the Churban Bayis Rishayim, reduced the whole Torah to three principles. It's like actually it's a very famous pasuk. Ma Hashem Elokecha Shoel Mi'imach. What does Hashem ask from you? Kiim Asais Mishpat, to do justice. Avas Chesed, the loving of kindness. Vahatsneya Leches Im Hashem Elokecha, and to walk humbly with tznius, with Hashem. This verse is on, I don't remember which building, it's on the facade of one of the U.S. government buildings. I don't know why, I can't even imagine which one, because I don't know why it would be there, but the idea of walking humbly with that. Very, very famous pasuk. So Micha got it down to three. Yeshayahu, who was a later contemporary, got it down to two. And this is the Haftorah that we read on fast days. Shimru Mishpat, keep justice. V'yasu tzedakah, and do charity. Now, before I get to Habakkuk, we got down to one, and we don't go below one. Let's focus on the interesting differences between Micha and Yeshayahu. Micha's first one was Asais Mishpat, to do justice. Yeshayahu changed it to Shimru, to guard justice. What's the difference? So Shimru is normal, and you can see the Yeridas HaDoros. Micha is calling upon Bnei Yisrael to do acts that are just. By Yeshayahu's time, many people were not capable of doing justice. But the most we could tell them is, don't do injustice. Preserve justice, because if you can't do just things in the world, at least don't do unjust things. Right? That's why it goes from Aseis Mishpat to Shimru Mishpat. It represents an Iskatnu Adairus. Now, Micha's second thing, Avas Chesed, to love kindness. That's where the Chavetz Chaim got the name for his Sefer on Gemilas Chesedim. It's called Avas Chesed. Yeshayahu changes it to Asai Tzedakah, do charity. Now, if you remember, the Gemara in Sukkah says there's a difference in Gemilas Chesedim and Tzedakah. Chesed is with your guf, Tzedakah is with your mama, etc. Chesed you can do to the rich and the poor. Tzedakah you can only do to the poor. So here's the thing. Micha is saying a Jew should have a love of doing chesed. It shouldn't just be something you just do ritualistically. Yeshayahu is referring to Niskatnu HaDairus. Let's say I don't really care about people. I don't really want to help them. He says, okay, if you haven't reached the level of Avas Chesed, at least write a check. At least give tzedakah. In other words, it's a more emasculated form of Chesed, where you don't have the Ava and you don't have the commitment of your time and your efforts, but at least give money. One other thing in Micha. You'll notice Micha says, Aseis Mishpat, love justice. I'm sorry, do justice and love Chesed. Note that Micha, going back to Micha, Micha doesn't say love Mishpat. You see an interesting point here. Doing justice, it's necessary to do justice. I can't just, have mercy and if I'm a judge and say I like you because you're poor and etc. The Torah answers that. But Micha is suggesting, although you must do justice when that's necessary, the thing you should love is chesed. Chesed is what you love. Justice is what you do. Right? You love chesed, you do justice. Now you may ask a question from Shmona Esrei. In Shmona Esrei, we describe Hashem as a melech Ohei Tzedakah Umishpat. Hashem loves not only charity, but loves judgment, justice. And the answer is, only Hashem's justice is perfect. He can love it. Our justice is imperfect. Just to give you a mashal, Rabbi Shlomo Salanter, that by a melech baser adam, let's say a king or a court sentences somebody to prison, and the person deserves to be in prison. So it's a totally just sentence. But what about the fact that the family is suffering? What about the fact that people who care about him are suffering? Well, they may not deserve the suffering, but you can't do anything about it. In human justice, that's like inevitable collateral consequences. Hashem's judgment, Rabbi Shlomo Salanter said, is so perfect that every single ripple effect is deserved. That somehow, if it wouldn't be deserved for the family to feel a certain thing, then something else would have happened that wouldn't have had that consequence. So it's only shayach by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to love justice, because his justice is perfect. Our justice is by definition tainted, so we sometimes have to do it. We have to do the best that we can, but it's not something that we love. Okay. Now, yeah.
Just in like Kabbalah shows, we say that when Hashem comes to judge the earth, all like the trees shake and they sing and
yeah.
So what does that mean?
Well, it depends on which pasuk, but one of the images is that all of creation fears Hashem's judgment, because none of them are deserving. All of them are, you know, potentially guilty, etc. So they quake. The singing is that when Hashem gives perfect justice in the world, so that's a sanctification of the greatness of Hashem. So it's as if all of the nature sings and rejoices. So it depends. It's a combination of a trepidation and a great simcha in the fact that Hashem's judgment is going to be so perfect and correct. Now, going back to the descent from Micha to Yeshayo, so we've explained, Micha says, Asais Mishpat. Yeshayahu says, Shimru Mishpat. Micha says, Avas Chesed. Yeshayahu says, Asais Tzedakah. But then we have the third one, which is the one left out. Micha says, Hatznei Aleches, to walk with modesty. And Yeshayahu says nothing. So how do we explain the that's the one that's omitted. Going from two to three is we omit Hatznei Aleches. Why does he omit Hatznei Aleches? So here there's a deep thought that's involved. The Gemara says Hatznei Aleches. See, we make a big mistake when we hear the word sneas today. All we think about is lengths of girls' sleeves and dresses, you know, whatever it is, and the like. But sneas is not about dress a station. Sneas is about a certain attitude of humility, of modesty, of not showing publicly things that are really private and in your heart. And the Gemara in Makos says that this refers to Avodas Hashem, that one's Avodas Hashem should be private. People don't have to see. We don't do mitzvahs to show off. We don't mitzvahs to impress people. One's Avodas Hashem should be a private matter. But Yeshayahu is merames that as the Doros gets spiritually weaker and weaker, it is sometimes important to do your mitzvahs publicly so that people can learn from you. In other words, you gotta set aside. In other words, is it better to do mitzvahs privately or publicly? Objectively, it is better to do it privately. But in a door that needs a hashpa, a person needs to do it. You know, I'll give you an example. This is really a bit of an extreme example. I knew a person who said that his father was a big, big Talmud Chacham. But his father was so humble, such a great anav, that he never wanted anybody to see him learn, including his own children. So he only learnt when the children were asleep. And when they were awake, he only read the paper or watched TV or whatever it would be. Now you could say, wow, what an anav. On the other hand, what happened is the kids didn't have a role model of somebody that's Yoshev Yisek Patera. You see? And indeed, Kachavi, this particular individual, was not Zaycha to be somebody that was learning Torah even on a semi-regular basis. You know, now I don't know if his story about his father is true, but it's an interesting idea. Now, there was, I'll tell you, there was, okay, Baruch Hashem, he had, his children didn't suffer for it, but, Rabbeinu Shvinkel, Rabbeinu Shvinkel was Rav Nosson Zvi Finkel's father-in-law. Everyone's Finkel. Finkel is the big mishpacha of Mir, although the origin is the altar of Shlubatka, but Finkel, everyone is, like Hanukh Teller has a old joke in his biography about somebody who, if you call the Mir Yeshiva and you ask for Rabbi Finkel, he's all a little skin about, you know, Rabbi Finkel's in Europe. Says, well, I want the other Rabbi Finkel. There's like 10 people you can go through. But anyway, some of them have the same name because they're cousins and the like. But Rabbeinu Shvinkel, he was almost obsessed with people not knowing that, you know, that he was a gadol b'Torah. So he had to give a shiur because he was a sheep of Mir, but, when he would, come to give a shiur, he would tell guys, oh, you can leave, I'm giving a shiur now, just, you know, don't bother staying, it's gonna be nothing important. Tell people, feel free to leave. He, you know, in the afternoons, he would go out to give tzedakah like an anonymous person to people. You know, he would like buy them groceries. He would clean their apartments. He would do all sorts of things. People didn't even know who he was. They thought he was, you know, an old man with a beard that needed to clean houses, although he did it for free. You know, different things like this. He used to get up like 2 o'clock in the morning to learn, in the kitchen. If anybody got up, he had a newspaper under the tablecloth. If he heard people coming, he would put the Gemara under the tablecloth and put the newspaper and said, you know, I couldn't sleep, I'm reading the paper, whatever. He was almost a mishugana about, you know, nobody should know what he was doing. Alright, so that's a yes in the cloud. But there is a remez in Yeshayahu's Nevuah that sometimes you have to give up the tznias in order to be Mekadesh Shem Shamayim and to be an example. You know, in the literature world in the early 19th century and much earlier, but it kind of died out in the middle of the 1800s, there was a concept, the Altar of the Vardik was probably the last one who really did it, there was a concept of Perushim. In fact, the official name of the Kehila of the Gra in Yerushalayim are still called the Prushim. There's a group of them. Now, Prushim literally means the separate ones. And among their customs is they would actually be somewhat hermetic. They would, like, learn all week by themselves. They wouldn't be with their families, only on Shabbos. And in Lita, there were quite a few groups. I mean, there was never very large, but there were groups of tzaddikim that would be misbodeh. We think of hispaitidus as Breslov, but no, this was Litvisha hispaitidus. And Rabbi Saul Salanter, as a young man, very much was mishtaikik. He very much had a desire to live that type of life where you're away from the world, you're not involved in anything, you spend your whole day just in Torah, Avodah, Tefillah. But at some point he said, in a generation where there are so many Jews who are far from Torah, he says he's not allowed to give himself that pleasure. He is mechuyev to work and be involved with people. And that could be why Yeshayahu takes away Vatsneya Lechas. Can't be so tzanua. Now, the Gemara then goes on and says, after Micha got it down to 3, and Yeshayahu got it down to 2, Chabakuk got it down to as low as you can get it, is that's one. One principle that is the yesod of everything in the Torah. And that's a verse in the Navi Chabakuk that says, "Tzadik b'emunaso yichya." A tzadik lives by emuna. The belief that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Borei Olam, the belief that Hashem cares about how I live my life. If one internalizes emuna, if you believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving you life every single second, and as a result you have avas Hashem for the life that He's giving you, and you have yiras Hashem because you realize how the whole universe only exists because of His ratzon. So memelei, a person's going to know the mitzvahs. In fact, Hillel told the guy, you know, what is hateful you don't do others, that's the whole Torah. Okay, but at least from this Gemara at least, Chabakuk is telling us the whole Torah is the yesod of emunah.
And that was easier for people to comprehend?
It was easier in the sense that they didn't have to remember the details. In other words, obviously to live as a Jew you have to know the 613 mitzvahs, but the guiding principle is give Hashem nachas because your awareness of Hashem, your awareness of Hashem gives in your heart an avas Hashem for all the good that He's given you, and a yiras Hashem when you contemplate the grandeur and magnificence of His power in creating the whole universe and giving the whole universe life. So the Ber Yosef wants to say like this. He wants to say that when it comes to the Mishkan, the reason why HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not require everybody give the same thing, there's no uniformity in contribution, is because everybody builds the Mishkan in their own way. Because the Mishkan is a symbol of the Hashem dwelling in my heart. V'yasu li mikdash, make for me a mikdash, Hashem says, v'shachanti b'socham, so I will dwell in their heart, not in the building, but in the heart and soul of Am Yisrael. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want people to be the same. We're not dealing with everybody has to be the same. That's why we have different Shvatim, different Drachim and Avodas Hashem. We have Yisachar and Zebulun and different ways of serving HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So everybody's Mishkan is different. Whatever gold, silver, copper represents, everybody is different. Some people give this, some people do this. And the beauty of Klal Yisrael emerges from the tapestry, from the multiple colors, from the blending of the differences, not the homogenization. And part of the struggle we have in Eretz Yisrael within the religious world is the emphasis on people, everybody being the same. And in fact, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants people to be different within the framework of Torah. But even if it's true that everybody builds their own Mishkan, there has to be a Tzad HaShaveh. There has to be a commonality in the foundation of the Mishkan that you build. And the foundation is Habakkuk's principle of Emunah. In other words, just as we say, the whole Torah rests on one foundation. The Adonim is that foundation, Emunah. And the reason that's common is because everybody serves Hashem in their own way, but they all need the same foundation. And that same foundation is Emunah. But one other point. Why are there two Adonim? And every socket, every board, really a beam, not a board, because it was thick, a tefach thick, and it was also coated in gold, wood covered in gold. Every beam needs two Adonim, because Emunah has two levels. This is very beautiful. Emunah means I believe in Hashem, and I also believe in myself. I believe in my own goodness. There's also an Emunah in yourself. You have to believe in yourself. Person can sometimes feel, maybe often feels, that they're so insignificant, that why should their mitzvahs matter? Why should their learning matter? Why should Hashem care about what they're doing? And that sounds like humility, and that sounds like anava, but that's really a yetzer hara that keeps us from accomplishing what we're able to accomplish. It keeps us from doing our mission. And therefore, just as I'm maimin in Hashem, I'm also maimin that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made me, made all of us, with tremendous kochos to be able to make a difference in the world. Rav Ruchim of Mir used to say that the person who is not aware of his chesronos is a fool, but the person who is not aware of his kochos, of his greatness, is a tragedy. And they say at the Levaya of the Chazon Ish, I've mentioned it before, Rav Dessler, who was the Mashgiach of Panovich at the time, went over to a bacher who was crying, and he said to the bacher very powerful words, why are you crying over the Rav, the Gain, and the Tzaddik that's buried in the ground? He then pointed to the Bachar. You should cry over the Rav, the Gain, and the Tzaddik that's buried in you. Because there is a Rav, Gain, and a Tzaddik that's buried in you. And that's what the Adonim represent. Now, and that's why it has to be uniform. Now, the second mitzvah of Matos HaShekel, which is the Korbanos Sibur, I'll leave for tomorrow. That may have a totally different meaning. Okay, we'll separate. Yep.
I think I saw Ibn Ezra, this is Pasha, speaking about why Aaron was the Kohen Gadol, not Moshe.
Yeah.
Because Moshe was too busy teaching all the mitzvahs to Ibn Ezra. But I thought the Mishnah people always said that Moshe spoke to Yeshua, spoke to the Zakenim. So was Moshe still teaching to Bnei Israel after he gave over to Yeshua, gave to the Zakenim? Why was Moshe still busy?
Well, Moshe, let me put it this way, Moshe taught the Torah to all of Bnei Yisrael at least once. There's no question, because the Seder HaDvarim is, he taught it to Aaron, then he taught it to Aaron Ubanav, then he taught it to the Shivim Zakenim, then he taught it to Kol Yisrael, and then Aaron did it three times. That's the idea. Moshe Rabbeinu did teach Torah to all of Bnei Yisrael. Now, how long did that take? Were there questions and answers? It's a good question. Moshe's teaching everything to 600,000 people, or 3 million people, counting the women and the children. How long did it take? But I'm saying it's not a stira, because although it's true that the repetitive teachings were done by the people under Moshe, Moshe Rabbeinu did teach it 4 times, and one of them was L'chol Yisrael.
He was still too busy doing that to be.
So it doesn't say that Aaron was there pretty much every time Moshe was teaching.
Aaron was there every time, yeah.
So they were both there.
Yeah, that's the question. The question is they were both there. Yeah. Okay. Again, if you're asking me that the Eben Ezra is connected to Chazal, that's hardly the first time. The Eben Ezra did not consider himself bound by any Medrash Chazal said. Now the Medrash itself, and maybe that's why they didn't give the Eben Ezra. The Medrash itself is another reason why Moshe was not going Gadol. It basically says that since he did not want to look when Hashem told him to look at the Shekhinah and the Sneh, he did not want to look, and he did not want to accept the Achrayas, so he was not given the Kahuna. He would have been given the Kahuna had he been willing to accept. That's a different reason, but that would be consistent. That would not be a contradiction to that idea. No. Also, the Shivim Zakenim, and the question is. See, you have another question, because it's not so clear. There is a mention of the Shivim Zakenim at Matan Torah. Right? And yet, it seems that they were not appointed till the Midbar, till much later. When Moshe Rabbeinu complains about the Bnei Israel complaining, he says, after Korach. And then he's told to appoint the 70 Zakenim. So are these the same 70 Zakenim? In other words, what I'm saying is that even the statement of Chazal that the Iker Torah to Klal Yisrael with the Shivim Zakenim, that may not have been until almost the end of the 40 years. Because the Zakenim were not given Smicha, so to speak, till the end of the 40 years, even though there was some role they had before. So you have to be Ma'ayan, when did that teaching Shita start get into existence? That's a good question. Did you want to say anything?
What were the two
psukim? I'll
look up
the psukim. Yeah, Yishayo and Micha?
Yeah.
Yeah, Micha is Shimru, I'm sorry, Asais Mishpat, Avas Chesed, Hatsnei Aleches in Hashem Alokecha.
Yeah.
And Yishayo's pasuk is Shimru Mishpat, the Asait Tzedakah. Okay. No, that's nailed it. Okay, good.
Cool. At the beginning, what he said.